Hello, you beautiful specimens. How are you? I hope you're doing good. I hope you're okay. I want you to tell me how you're really doing. I'm listening to you. I want you to feel like you're seen and heard. So FaceTime me, call me, text me, send audio, email, DM, whatever it is. Reach out and have a chat with me. I'm here for you. For those of you that don't know by now, this is an episode of the Black Girl Tea Podcast, and I am Nye. No, I'm serious though. Let me know how y'all doing. I don't know why I was just so serious at the beginning of that episode. I was really trying to keep it together too. It's very hard to stay serious when I'm not necessarily having to have a work conversation. I've noticed. And even with work, I'd be cracking up. Something wrong with me. But let's get into this episode. So at the beginning of March, I had my International Women's Day event. It was beautiful, like I said to you guys before. Still, I'm a little lost for words. I feel good about it. The people who attended feel good about it. And, you know, that's all that really matters. So, that event was beautiful. And then right after that, I had an episode talking about Love is Blind, particularly pertaining to AD and Clay. And more so Clay than AD. Nothing against my girl, but, you know, I had to make a point. I have watched the reunion, but let's talk about the reunion first before we get into this episode. I feel like they should have talked about Jimmy and Chelsea a little bit more. Chelsea pissed me the fuck off, and I don't like to feed into the internet slander and stuff like that, but when they said that woman looked like Jay Leno, she wasn't, it was a lie. She kind of looked like Jay Leno. But, I think, for me, again, not saying that no one else's experience mattered, but I really was just paying attention to Clay and AD, and not necessarily that I want to see them back together, because like I said, I do understand where AD is coming from, but I feel like if Clay did the work, she should let him spin a blog. That's just my two cents. He seems like he's a good guy. It doesn't seem like it's a situation where he's being manipulative or anything, so I think they should see where this really goes. But again, I understand where she's coming from if she's not open to getting back to that point with him. I really enjoyed watching Brett, is that his name? When Clay and Brett had their moment with each other, black man. I don't really know how I feel about Kenny. He kind of pissed me off. I do appreciate him speaking on his emotions, though. It's appreciative for me to see men in general speak on their emotions, but black men, it really do something to me. But when people were saying that he was nonchalant about, you know, the breakup that he had, I don't even remember the girl name he was with. Yeah. No disrespect to that woman, but when he broke up with Shorty, they were saying that he seemed insensitive, and in the beginning, watching it was like, damn, like, he didn't seem like he cared. And I feel like it was kind of portrayed that way. I don't think that they did it on purpose with how they were filming, but I feel like a recap of like what happened after the breakup would have been important in the episodes and not just for the reunion. And that plays a part in how people's emotions are translated as well, because if they would have been able to show that moment of him, you know, kind of actually sitting in his emotions, we wouldn't have felt as if it was like him being nonchalant or anything. But that's that. But yeah, I hope y'all enjoyed the reunion. I hope the episode that I did prior to this helped somebody. Really more so helped men. But I do hope that it helped somebody. And yeah, Love is Blind wasn't too bad this time around. I think this is the first one I've watched thoroughly since... Actually, this is the first one that I've thoroughly watched since the first one. Because the other ones I couldn't get into. But this one was pretty good. But moving right along... After, you know, the event, saying what I said last week, a lot of the women from the event, and I don't think the two happening back to back made them ask these questions. I think it was just a question that they wanted to ask for the sake of, like, me not having the opportunity. I don't want to say I didn't have the opportunity to share as much as they shared during the event, but what was shared needed to be shared. And I didn't talk too much about myself. Y'all listen to me talk about myself every fucking time I get on this podcast. So when we're having these spaces, and we're all in person, it doesn't need to be my story that's being told. It's a safe space for you all. But a couple someones, asked me a couple of different questions, and I would just answer them as I go along. I'm not going to put too much emphasis on what the questions were, but I've said before, like, planning those type of events are not easy, and it's not just about the logistics of having food, having chairs, having, you know, a space to do these things in, making sure that tickets are, it's bigger than that. People come in these spaces and they spill all their business, some more than others. Some situations are heavier than others, and you just really have to be emotionally prepared. And as I shared with you guys, most of the time when you have spaces like these, the people who are hosting and curating these type of events, we just have to sit there in the moment and listen to everything that you're saying, and allow, I'm saying God, but whoever you depend on to give you your wisdom and things like that, we have to sit there in those moments and allow God to give us the words to say back to you. Because it's not always about what I've been through. And again, I'm 27 with no kids, never been married, never been divorced. So a woman who's dealing with that, I can only encourage her but so much. But I have to depend on my relationship with God and asking God to give me the words to say to help someone in that healing process. And I say a prayer every time I have an event, just so that people can see, like, I'm not operating in me, I'm operating in God. And it's not to be super holy or anything, but for me, I had to, and I'm gonna break it down for y'all. In the morning, and the day of my event, right, this is what we're talking about, the day of my event. I woke up super early that morning and had to just, you know, prepare myself for the event, make sure my outfit looked fine, make sure that, you know, my skin was looking good, had to do some skincare, did some last minute running around, had to figure some things out, had to make sure the food was, you know, capable of being done at a specific time, making sure we had chairs, had to do all that. But one other thing that I had to do was I had to go to therapy. I had a therapy session that morning. I had to deal with what I was dealing with. I had to have a conversation. I had to ask my therapist, like, okay, in the event that tonight certain things come up, certain topics come up, what is your experience with that? What advice do you have for me with that? And she told me. And every morning when I wake up, I pray. So I had prayer, then I went to therapy. As I was at home preparing for the event, I had to pray again. God, I am headed to this event. Allow the preparation to be a great one. Allow the event to be a great one. Give me the words to say. Reveal yourself in me in that moment. Guide these women there safely. Get them back home safely. And just be, like, I'm asking you guys to be present in the room. Just work through us and allow people to see you, the you that is in me. Simply my prayer. Get to the event. Get to JSB. And per usual, Jay's energy was just great. Per usual. And everything just flowed. We did have a few hiccups, but it wasn't hiccups that were major, that would make you freak out, or that would completely have to make you adjust things. It was just perfect, honestly. And then right before the event, it was me, Laura, Jay, and Anaya. We're gonna pray to God, help us get through to these people, give us the mental capacity and the emotional capacity to be able to support them in this room. Again, you please utilize us. And I don't know, and I never had in-depth conversations with any of them in regard to religion or anything, but they were very receptive of what I was saying. And it just, and for me, being receptive during that prayer was also a moment for them to allow God to use them as well. And when I'm saying that I need God to use us, it's not just being able to give us answers to people's questions, but it's, God, give us the courage to speak on what we're going through to be able to help these women and be able to hold a conversation, because you don't know the crowd that you're going to get. Although I did see some familiar names on that list, from the last time I've seen them in July. Yes, July. From the last time I seen them in July, their lives could have taken a completely different turn of events. I no longer know what they're going through. So God, give me the courage to be able to say what I have to say, to give them the courage to say what they need to say. But also give me the answers to have some rebuttal, if and when is needed. And the emotional capacity to listen and deal with and help them deal with what they're dealing with and support them in that moment. That's all that prayer means to me. And I'm very, very, very clear when I'm praying to God in anything, but especially with events like this and what the support and strength I need from him to look like. And not necessarily look like, but exactly what I need from him. Like, God, I need your strength right now. I need your word. I need your courage. I need you to be in this right now. And as women are talking and everything, the conversations just flow. And sometimes there are points and periods where a woman will say, you know what, I'm struggling right now. I'm a single mother. I haven't always been a single mother. And they tell their story. I was with my husband for 10 years. Out of the 10 years, we had 8 good ones. The last 2 years of our marriage sucked. I lost myself. I had to find myself. Blah, 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 blah. And they go on and on and on and on and on. And in the moment, just being an avid listener, me being an avid listener, so I'm not talking about anybody else in the room. Me in that moment when they're talking, I have to be an avid listener. And I find ways, you know, to support them. And a lot of times, what you don't realize is when a person's talking, the eye contact means everything, because it kind of shows that you're actually listening to them. Being able to, when they're saying, like, but I did that, the head nod, the clap, all of that, it has to be there in that moment. So this person knows that they're supported. But one thing I do is when I'm listening, I always have a question ready. So I'll use an example of something that actually happened at the event. One of the things that we did was we went around the circle and asked, what's your favorite thing about being a woman? What's your favorite thing about womanhood? And everyone had really good answers. And I realized that there was this one young lady who, when she answered, and it's not that her answer wasn't a good answer, but when she answered, she didn't answer for her. She answered for the sake of kind of what she thought people wanted her to hear. And I could tell that that was what was going on. One, I was sitting right next to her. Two, I have rapport with this young woman. And watching her body language and everything of what she was saying, like, she was really thinking on that answer. Like, girl, you are saying what you think that we want to hear. And sometimes in rooms where there's, you know, 20 people sitting there and you ask everyone the same question, you're going to hear, I don't want to say you're going to hear, but you might hear, and it's more likely to hear, some people piggybacking off of other people's answers, and that's 100% okay. But what I look for in those moments and how I can help support and, like, drive a conversation is when you're piggybacking off of what someone's saying, explaining what it means to you. I'll give you an example using that same question. What's your favorite thing about womanhood? What is womanhood to you and things like that, right? So focusing on the part of that question of what's your favorite thing about womanhood, one of the answers that we heard continuously is the sisterhood within womanhood. That's some of these women's favorite things. And most of them had their own example, their own reason for that being one of their favorite things. This young lady, I listened to her take everyone's answer and put it in a sentence. And typically, you'd probably say, like, oh, there's nothing wrong with that because she still answered the question. Yes, right? She still answered the question, but she didn't tell me what her favorite thing was. So I let the question rock. I let her response rock. And I forgot what the next question was, but she answered the question. And I said, I have a question for you. And she kind of looked at me. And, you know, we have rapport. So she kind of seen where I was going with this. And I asked her, what does all this mean to you? Because I'm watching you and hearing you give everyone else praise and acknowledging everyone else, but you're not acknowledging yourself in that moment. And of course, right? To some people, that's like, that's deep. And I'm not saying that it's not, but I had to give her that moment. Like, I want you to know in this capacity right now, I'm listening to you, I'm hearing you, I'm seeing you, and I need you to dig a little bit deeper. Because there's some type of healing that needs to happen. Either you don't have the confidence to speak on yourself in a highly manner, or you don't know how. And if that's the case, before you leave here tonight, you need some aspect of it. You know, like, you have to understand some aspect of that. I need to help you practice some aspect of that so that you can leave here not knowing. Like, you came not knowing and you're leaving knowing. And it may not be like the final answer of what speaking to herself may be, but you came in one way and you're leaving another. And you're leaving with examples. You're leaving with support. I had this young lady look in the mirror and speak life into herself. Like, and there was, every woman that was in that room was very much supportive of her. That was new. And right after that flowed a whole new topic of conversations. And I had to derail my plan a little bit. Some of the questions I had originally wanted to ask and talk about with the group, we didn't even get to. Because you had to just operate. And I hate to be the person to keep bringing God into it, but I had an agenda, but I had to create a space where God's agenda could also be, you know, taken care of and met. And with her saying, me asking her that simple question, that was very hard for her to explain, had other women come out and say, I struggled with this, and this is how I moved forward. And the reason why I struggled with this is because I was raised this way. Or the reason why I was struggling with this is because once I got married, I didn't know how to do it. Like, it, all the answers were there. So, everything that I just covered pretty much answers the question to, how do I have the wisdom and the opportunity and the resources to just ask these types of questions. It's really not me sitting here thinking about it. And the questions that I had on paper to ask that night were very, I don't want to say lackluster in comparison to what I did ask, but it, again, I had to shift my whole agenda because of the energy and the spirit that was in that room. It was a moment of spirituality, for everybody. Very much spiritual, very much emotional, very heavy event. Heavy in a good way, not heavy in a negative way. And leaving the event, well, once the event was over and everyone was cleaning up and everything, I sat down, and I said this in the previous episode, like, I sat down and I began to cry. And it was very much like a happy cry. Like, whew, we got through this. Not necessarily a check off, you know, check the box cry, but like, wow, we really got through this. And I felt good. I didn't feel the heaviness of in the past with other events, whether it was in person or virtual. It, when someone says certain things to you, it kind of just resonates in your spirit. Like, I'll say with one of the, not the very first tea party, but one of the ones we did right after the first one, probably like the second or third or something, a young lady had shared her story with us, and that young woman's story laid heavy on my heart for days. And I couldn't figure out why her story was just in my head for as long as it was. I couldn't figure anything out. It was very weird. I didn't understand it, but it just was there. And at that point in time, I didn't have a therapist. This is during COVID. I didn't have a therapist. It was literally me and Shay in a journal, and my notes in my phone, trying to like maneuver through things. And I didn't have that safety net for myself. I couldn't unpack things in my home because this is COVID. We here with the whole fam. And it was like, if in the moment of during COVID, during this, those tea parties, when those heavy topics and conversations and stories were shared, it kind of, not only did it just sit in my heart and in my spirit and in my mind, it festered with the energy that I had, but I had nowhere else to dump that load, because it was such a heavy time period in life for me. And I feel like because of where I am in life now, I don't want to say the world is better, but we're in a better space in the world. Like, COVID is no longer a factor. I'm on my healing journey, so now I have things in place for when I have those heavy moments that I'm able to, you know, let me take a step back and let's breathe. I'm at a point now where I can call my friends and be like, hey, can we get silent drinks tonight? Like, I want to be around my friends because I need that energy. I need the laughter when we're ready to talk, but I also just need silence. And that's something that really helps me with making sure that those type of events are going the way that they're going. When it comes to having the conversation that I had last week, someone asked me, and I'll share this question. Someone said, where are you in your healing journey now that it was easy for you to talk about things with men? It was easier for you to talk about things with men than it was for you in the past. And I told that person that I needed a couple days to give them an answer. And I want that person to know, I didn't need a couple days to figure out what the answer was. I needed a couple days to be able to explain to you exactly where I am in my healing process. So, as a lot of you have heard me say, I struggle with dealing with certain relationships with men. It's not always struggling in a romantic relationship. It's not always struggling in a platonic relationship. But it's kind of like the characteristics of the man that have me struggling with the relationship. So, y'all, I need something to drink. Hold on. So again, it's not that I'm struggling when it comes to men platonically versus romantically. It's literally the characteristics of the men. What do I mean by that? So, please hold. To use two men that I absolutely love and adore would be the best thing for me to do to be able to help you guys understand exactly what I mean in this moment. So I'm going to use my relationship with my cousin JB and my relationship with I use my relationship with my cousin JB and my relationship with my grandfather. Those two relationships is what I will use to explain what I mean when I say I struggle with certain things when it comes to certain men. So to describe that relationship with each of them, I'll start with my grandfather. So I'll say my grandfather was sweet, very just gentle and patient man. 100% supportive. What the hell don't fail with you? He was tough on me, but it was like his kind of toughness. Like if I set my mind to something and I was like, I'm gonna do it. He never allowed me to, you know, give up on myself or give up on what my end goal was. He was very much encouraging. Always had, like, little words of wisdom. Just sweet little old man. Like, what you would imagine a grandpa being, that was my grandfather. He didn't have a problem with, like, getting down and dirty with me, if that's what it came down to it. He didn't have a problem with playing with Barbie dolls. Like, it was my world, and he was living in it. And I love that. He catered to me. He catered to my feelings and emotions. I love that man. In comparison to JB, who's the total opposite. Like, JB would literally... And let me start by saying, I didn't always have a relationship with JB. Life happened. We were children. We have to follow what adults do. We were 16. Well, I was 16 when we became cool with each other. He was 18. JB is 100% rough around the edges. Every edge that he has, very much rough. And he speaks with, like, a certain level of aggression. And you really have to know him to understand, like, if he's being disrespectful or not. So if I were to say to my grandfather, like, I really want to... I have a conversation with my grandfather on Monday. My grandfather would 100% listen to me. Just listen. He didn't interrupt me when I was talking. Love that about him. Even when I was talking about nonsense, just listened. If I sit down with my grandfather on Monday and I'm like, Grandpa, I have this really cool idea, blah, 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 he would be like, well, get it on some paper, figure out the logistics of it, and when you're ready to talk about it with me, I'm here. If you don't want to talk about it with me, I'm here. I'll check in on it, on everything with you. When do you plan on starting this? And I would say, oh, I'm going to sit down tonight and research it, and I want to say the following Monday, my grandfather would be like, so whatever happened with so-and-so? And if I say, oh, I never got around to it, he'll be like, oh, okay, well, don't take too long now. When you got an idea, you want to move on it, jump on it before somebody else jump on it. Very sweet, very encouraging. And it wasn't like he was being hard on me. He was following up. If I have that same conversation with JB, JB is going to listen to me. He's always going to give me the space to speak. But on Friday, JB is going to be like, so what the fuck happened with the idea? Like, where we at? And if I say, oh, I didn't get around to it. Oh, you playing. You really don't want to be successful. Get out of my face. I don't want to hear about anything you got going on until you figure that out. And if I'll be like, all right, cool. And I would try to have a casual conversation with him. He would block me out. Like, he would straight up ignore me. Or I would talk to him and he would look at me. Y'all know the blinks that I'd be giving y'all sometime, or that y'all have experienced me give people. That is how JB would look at me. And obviously, like, someone like my grandfather is very easy to talk to at times. Sometimes you don't want somebody that's gentle. And we all have moments where you're craving for someone to be hard on you, like JB. But it's easy for me to talk to a gentle person. Not necessarily easy to open up to them, but it's easy for us to have a conversation. Someone like JB, who is just like, I'll describe JB as being like on a thousand all the time. Like, JB just be ready to go. That's one of my favorite things about him. He's ready to go. It just, like, when JB feels as though you ain't doing enough, you ain't doing enough. And it don't matter if it's in your own entity of it or his. If it ain't enough, it ain't enough. And he blocks you out. And sometimes, a lot of the times, both of those types of relationships and those types of men work for me, because there are times where I do want that. We all want that gentle person in our lives. And sometimes, you know, I really do need someone to hold my hand. JB is not always capable of holding my hand. It's for many reasons. But for men who are like my grandfather, it's easy for me to talk to them. Not necessarily easy for me to open up, but it's easy for me to talk to them. When I am interacting with men like JB, I close off. I'm not even gonna lie to you. It's very hard for me to talk to you. It's easy for me to talk to JB because we have a bond. We understand each other. But when men come into my life and they have that aggression to them, like, they have to be super macho, I get really turned off easily. Like, you're one just super hyper masculine, and I really don't have the time for it. As I've gotten older, I've just been able to sit back and listen to people. And that has been a very big help in my healing process. And sometimes when you sit back, sitting back and letting people show you exactly who they are is always a win. It's always a help. You may be disappointed in who they are, but at least you know when, like, in the beginning, just sit back and let shit unfold. Don't try to just jump into bonding with someone or anything like that. And these are things y'all already know, but y'all ask me a question, I'm answering it. But men like JB, I really just be like, yeah, let's see. Let's figure this out. And it's not always easy. It really isn't, because there are parts of JB's character and his aggressiveness that I'd be like, bro, you really missed the mark. I see the passion. I see how tough you are on me. And JB is tough on me. Let me say that. Like I said, he'll block me out if I'm not living up to the standard. There's a time, a couple weeks ago, at the beginning of planning Lipstick and Girl Talk, I was on the phone with JB. It was early in the morning. I was heading to work. And he's like, all right, what you got going on today? And I was just like, I'm at work. I'm here until 6. He's like, all right, what you get into after work? And I told him, like, oh, I'm going to just, you know, probably grab food, go home and work on some shit for my event. And he's like, oh, all right, cool. Like, I'll call you when I get off, check on you and everything. And JB called me. I got up work at 6. I think I got home like 7:30, 8 o'clock the latest. I don't remember what time I got home. But from the time we got off the phone until the time he called me back, which I done went through my whole shift at work, I was exhausted, y'all. I was exhausted. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to just come home, eat my food, take a shower, and get in bed. I personally was satisfied with that. And I was just okay with going to bed. Like, I felt like I had done enough today. And, like, I'd done enough in the day where I was satisfied with what I did. It wasn't too deep, too close to my event where I really needed to sit down. Like, I had done the basic logistics to get everything rolling. I just needed to see, you know, how ticket sales were going to go, how other things were going to play out. So when JB called me back and I was in a bed, he was real calm. He was like, oh, what you doing? So I said, I'm laying down. He said, the fuck you mean you laying down? I said, I'm laying down. He said, the fuck? You told me you was going to go and do some shit for your event. Get the fuck up. And he just started spazzing on me. And I know in the moment, he meant well, but that was just not the type of energy that I needed. And I hung up on him. And he sent me this long ass paragraph like, stop procrastinating. Like, your mind is literally a gold mine. Like, get the fuck up. Do what you gotta do. I don't want to hear later down the line that you forgot to do something. You didn't get something right. I don't want to hear you being up the whole 24 hours before the event trying to prep shit for the last minute, even though that's what I do anyways. But like, he spazzed, and I was like, damn. I ended up getting out of bed and regretted it in the next morning because I just couldn't think. I was just so tired. I was sleepy. I was yawning all day. I was dragging. My energy just wasn't there. But later in the week, as time had went on, I realized like every day there was so much more being thrown up on me that I didn't have time to do stuff with Black Girl Tea. And I was just like, you know what? Let me text this man. So I texted him and I was like, yo, I appreciate you pushing me out of the bed the other night, because if I would have waited, I would have had to put all this shit off to another week. And he was like, exactly. Like, he didn't even say thank you. He just said exactly. And sometimes I think I can only accept that type of toughness and stuff from JB. I don't think I'm in a place where I could accept it from somebody else. And if somebody else talks to me like that, I'm spazzing on him respectfully, because who the fuck are you talking to? But just being able to sit back and analyze people, and having men in my life already, like, I have so many men in my life. I have co-workers that are sweet to me and open with me about certain things to an extent. I have friends in the community, just men in my life who I'm able to learn from, and they're open enough to tell me, like, yo, sometimes I feel like women really don't be listening, and I have to ask questions, like, what do you mean by that? And sometimes they'll give me examples between the two of us, or they'll be like, look, the other day, I understand you had a lot going on, and you needed to hurry up and get where you needed to go, but I literally just needed 2 seconds from you, and you shut me down, and that bothered me. And, like, sometimes hearing those conversations from the men in my life just really just helped me understand and open myself up more, obviously, to the men in my life, but also just it helps me navigate relationships with other men. I was asked about my healing journey, so let me explain to y'all. When we first started this podcast, I had an idea of what I wanted my healing journey to look like. I wanted to be able to confront all of my issues, whether it was me confronting them alone or me being able to sit down and have conversations with people who played a part in me feeling the way I was feeling. In the beginning, let me first start off by saying I don't want to say that my idea of how I wanted things to go didn't go that way, but I will say the beginning of my healing process was very rocky. I was intimidated by how much I had to heal from. It was just like, damn, like, my experience with my mom, my experience with my dad, the basic battles of being a Black woman, growing up this beautiful Black girl and not understanding the trials and tribulations that came with that shit. I was trying to break generational curses without an example. Dating and had toxic relationships. Like, there were so many layers to this shit. And the therapist that I had at the time was very transparent with me and very helpful. Like, she told me, I may not be the therapist for you, but we're gonna get as far as we can. If you ever feel like you need to find someone else, I encourage you to do that. Don't feel like you have to sit here. And in the beginning, when she said that to me, I was like, this bitch don't even want to help me. So I found a new therapist. That therapist was really good. And she told me the same thing that the first therapist told me, but her delivery with it was a little bit different. She explained to me, like, I'm here to help you on this journey. Obviously, you have to be willing to do the work, and you have to be willing to do all the work, just not the easy parts. And she had asked me, like, what are you trying to heal from? And I have to go through my list. Like, mommy and daddy issues, just the basic being of being a Black woman, toxic relationships, not feeling like I was worthy, not feeling like I was able to find my people, like, things like that.
And she was like, all right, I think I can make this work. So she asked me, like, what do you want this to look like? Like, what do you want to gain from this? And that was one of the first times where I really had to think about things. And again, feeling very intimidated by how much I had to heal from. I felt like I was this, like, weird-ass person. Like, I was just like, there's so much fucking wrong with me, bro. Like, and then I started feeling unworthy again. Like, now I see why people don't want to fuck with me. And it wasn't even that people didn't want to fuck with me. It was just like, I was so broken and just wasn't able to realize it. And in some aspects of certain relationships, that would show, and, you know, my brokenness would show more than the healer part of me. And I finally, this second therapist really worked for me. And we started to really unpack my issues with my mom, because at that point in time, me and my mom were still on speaking terms. It wasn't to the point where me and my dad are. And she was like, any relationships that you feel like you can fix and people can do the work, let's do them. And I started, you know, going through things with her, with my mom. And in the process of really feeling good about being able to, she was getting me to the point to be able to identify the issues that I have with my mom, being able to identify the similarities with things with me and my mom and why we were probably butting heads. She got me to a really good place with things with my mom. And life be lifing, and she had to go. So I was like, fuck. She ended up moving to LA and wasn't able to practice in Connecticut anymore, so I had to find a new therapist. And in the midst of that, I was just like, all right, like, I need to be able to, maintain where she's got me thus far. I started going to this women's support group, and the day that I went to the women's support group, they were talking about, like, identifying our own behaviors and, like, looking in the mirror and doing some self-reflection. So at that point, that drove me to have to identify the things that played into my trauma that I allowed, and things that played into my trauma that, like, just, I guess for lack of a better terms, that people did to me. I don't know. I guess figuring out what was my fault in my healing journey. And I had to make a list of a few things, actually. So I had to identify, like, who did I want to be? What things that I like and dislike about myself? How can those things be corrected? How have they made an impact on my life? What were the goals that I had? What goals did I have for me personally, emotionally? Did I have any physical goals? Like, did I want to get into the gym or something like that? My career, where did I want to see myself? Where did I want to live? Trying to get an idea of, like, what my foundation was and all that type of stuff. Now that I'm taking into account what I have control over when it comes to my life, and then figuring out what I didn't have control over. So I had to figure out, like, who am I connected to? Who are these people? Do they mean well? Are these healthy relationships? Are they unhealthy relationships? What's making them unhealthy? How can I change that? Is it something that I can change? Does this person have to do the work? Is it worth addressing with them? Are they going to be receptive with that? Like, I had to go through this whole rabbit hole of things. Then I ended up making lists. This is what I want out of myself. This is what I want out of my friend. This is what I want out of my partner. And being able to see, like, obviously, a lot of the list had similarities, but, you know, different people play different roles and different things like that. Once I got through that aspect of it, of really sitting down and, like, identifying what were the controllables and what were the things that I had allowed, once I got through that part, I realized that talking about what I was going through with my therapist was the easy part. Talking about it and just getting it out of my system was easy. But to be honest, it was the standing on business. The standing on business part was hard, because I was having these uncomfortable conversations with people where I was like, all right, this is how this relationship makes me feel. It's not the best. You either got to do some work to stay in my life, or you're going to get cut off. And I did have to end up cutting people off. It was not comfortable, y'all. It was very sad. And people don't talk to you about friendship grief. And not friendship grief as in, like, this person has died. Like, friendship breakups, that's a whole nother, and I have an episode on that from way back when, but friendship breakups, like, that shit hurt. It really fucking hurts you. It takes you through a whole nother type of emotional roller coaster. But I was noticing, like, I wasn't standing on my boundaries, and that played a part in my trauma. Again, I have to take accountability for me not standing on business with these people. And once I really got to the point where I was like, I don't want to have to deal with this type of shit no more, I have to set boundaries. Setting the boundaries and sticking to them, and actively sticking to them. I couldn't, you know, let people maneuver and dance around the boundaries that I set. I had to stand on it. And I had to get comfortable with, if you are comfortable with the boundaries that I set, I have to be comfortable enough to let you go. So, you're going to respect the boundaries or you're not. And as time went on, it got very easier for me to let people go. And a lot of people were like, oh, that's cold, that's numb. Nah, I'm putting myself first. And that's been where I'm at for the last, 2 years. I won't say too much has happened. Like, obviously, life has happened. Friends come and go. Men come and go. But getting myself to the point where I am able to sit down and be like, you know what? I analyze my relationships a lot. Probably more than I should. I be overthinking. I'm not even gonna lie to y'all. But being able to sit down with myself and be like, you know what? I don't like how this person has been treating me for the last few days. Let me check in with them. And checking in with them is what I do, because you could be treating me crazy because what you got going on, it ain't got shit to do with anything I've done to you. It literally just be, people be going through it. Not everybody is emotionally intelligent. And I'm far from emotionally intelligent. I'll tell y'all that now. I will literally go ghost because I don't know how to communicate what I'm feeling to y'all. I will go ghost because I just want to go ghost. I don't feel like being bothered. That doesn't always feel good to the people on the other side. And I had to realize, like, I don't want anybody hurting me. I don't want to hurt anybody else. And really had to sit there and figure out, you know, how to do the work. It's not easy. I'm not going to sit up here and act like it's easy. Because it'd be days where I'd be saying, like, oh my God, I really miss when I was staying out with this person. We used to have a time. But I dare not put myself back through the ringer of what that relationship did to me. And the standing on business is really, like, the tough part. It's not talking about it with a therapist. It's not talking about it with your friend group. And it can be hard to do those things. I'm not going to knock it and say that it's not. There are moments where it's hard. Honestly, my therapist that I have now, she has a really great relationship with her father. And when I talk to her about the issues I'm having with my father, it's very hard for her to understand where I'm coming from. But it's very easy for her to help me, you know, get over that and get through it and deal with those emotions. But I struggle with talking to her about some of the issues that I had with my dad, because I don't want her to feel like when she talks about things that she's done with her dad, that I'm not in a place where I can support her. And honestly, I'm going to be honest with y'all, for real, for real. It is very hard for me to talk about anybody who has a good relationship with their dad. It's very hard for me to talk to them about things that they've done with their dad, experiences that they have with their dad, because I didn't have that. So I don't know how to sit here. I'm very proud of them. I'm very happy for them. I can celebrate that moment, but it's hard for me in the moment to say something because a little part of me is jealous. Like, damn, I wish I had that. I'm not jealous to the point where I'm going to just stop being friends with you because you have a good dad and I didn't have one. Again, these are uncontrollables. I can't control the fact that my dad was a shitty ass person, and I can't control the fact that your dad is a great person. Like, I can't control any of that. So it's often just very hard for me with talking about different things. But also being able to identify where I'm, like, slipping through the cracks. So in previous romantic relationships, I'm used to a certain type of thing. So when I'm not getting that, it's a little like, damn, you're not interested in me. And then just, you gotta sit back and be like, all right, let's look at this for what it is. Let's not be hypocritical or anything. Let's not self-sabotage. Like, let's just let this play out. I'm really being comfortable with being in the moment and being in my feelings. I'm getting comfortable with that, because before, if I was like, let's talk about the gushy shit, right? Let's talk about the cute little romantic shit that people be doing. And y'all know, I know y'all listened to that episode with me and Kayla. And when I say I don't like public dates, I don't, right? I hate it, actually, for multiple reasons, and I explained that in that podcast. I'm not going to explain it now. Podcast episode. I'm not going to do that in this episode. I really just... I've gotten to a point where I like my relationships private. Not a secret. Private. Private. Yes, it's because of trauma. Yes, it's because sometimes men can be very embarrassing. But I like the privacy in that. I do not like going out and sitting at the bar with my partner. I want to stay inside and sit at the bar in your house. Or maybe sit at the bar in my house. I don't know. Wherever we're at, it just needs to be in a private location. Not secretive, but private. Hopefully, I'll get to a point where maybe I can enjoy that. But I don't like it anymore. There was a point where I was like, I love this for myself. And like, again, it's a trauma because I'm sitting here loving the fact that I'm getting shown off at this restaurant. All eyes on me. And I'm sitting here, all eyes on me, not because this is cute. All eyes on me is because these niggas know what's going on when I'm not around. And you can't escape shit like that. Obviously, what's done in the dark will always come into the light. So you could be in a private situation and people still know that this man ain't shit. But I hate it. Like, I used to go on dates and get like little forehead kisses in public. Not too much anymore. Not a fan of it. Like, and it just irked me sometimes. I could give a man a hug. We could even hug each other and do the little rock side to side. But that other shit, not interested in it anymore. And I think having to pull myself back from experiencing those things really helped me be able to understand on a deeper level what was it about that. Like, so honestly, what was it about going out in public on a date that you don't like anymore? And it was the embarrassment that came with it. Like, knowing, you thinking in your head, like, oh, I got a nigga that's down for me. It's me, my man. And people are looking at you, all eyes are on you. The embarrassment that comes from that, hurtful. Especially when you're down for somebody. Don't make me have to tell you a side story. But, like, I had to take a step back and really understand, like, it's not the date itself or the person. It's the hurt that you felt from participating in these activities and it went left field. Now I feel like I've gotten to a place, I don't go to my therapist weekly anymore. I've graduated to bi-weekly. And she's on call when I need her. I appreciate that, sis, because I be needing her sometimes. But I really was able, I'm at a point now where I can feel, I can allow people to touch me. I'm not the most affectionate person. Y'all know this. But like, before, like, Bree and Kayla are so affectionate. Bree be wanting to hug people. She be like, come here, give me a hug. And we've talked about it before. Like, it's to that point for us because, like, those are things we didn't necessarily experience. So now that, like, wow, the joy that comes from a simple hug, a platonic hug at that, like, I just want to hug everybody. I don't want anyone to feel like they weren't hugged enough. So I get that with them. I love that for them 100%. But I'm still not on the same level as them. And they're patient with me. I think one of my favorite things about my healing process is the people who have been on the journey with me the entire time, them being able to say that they've seen a difference in me, has been obviously a great thing. But it's the way that the support has changed. And the way that now that I'm saying, like, guys, like, it be little shit. Guys, I'm going to start trying to go to bed early. So please, like, don't reach out to me after a certain time if you don't have to. And it's the whole, like, if they do reach out to me, they'll send a meme like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your sleep, or, you know, you trying to rest, this was just really funny and I wanted to send it to you while I had it up on my phone, I'm so sorry. And it's genuine, like, they really try their hardest. And instead of them now sending it to my phone, they'll send it to me on social media, where obviously I can put my phone on do not disturb, but those friends who know that those are boundaries of mine, they have bypassed because there's an emergency, I need to be known. But they'll send it to me on social media because they know I don't have my social media notifications on, so it's no disturbance to me. They check in. Hey sis, I know 2 weeks ago you've been saying you're trying to get in bed by 9, how's that been looking for you? Or, hey, I know you're trying to find a way to, you know, start simmering down earlier at night. I found a show that was good to watch. It helps me go to sleep. Here's an app that has new rain sounds. hey, let's go out and like, it's just the way they support me and the way that the support has changed to be able to support my healing journey. I cannot thank my friends enough. I really can't. For the friends that know that I'm trying to expand my palate with eating, because your girl is a picky eater. I know I'm big. So you're probably like, you can't be that much of a picky eater if you big. Baby, I eat fried chicken wings 6 out of 7 days of the week. And on any given day, fried chicken wings is what I'm having for lunch, and it's definitely what I'm having for dinner. But I'm trying to do better, and I do appreciate my friends for supporting me along the way. And more importantly, I appreciate y'all for asking those questions and really allowing me to, you know, speak freely about what my healing process is. I appreciate the check-ins and things like that. It makes me very happy. And to hear you guys say like, oh, when you started implementing this, were you feeling this way and that way? Because girl, I done started it and I don't know. It just feels good to know that I'm able to support someone in their healing journey, because I wasn't always capable of it. And I know y'all feel good to know that there's someone here to support y'all. I will say, if you are on a healing journey, don't think that this is going to be a linear growth. It's not. There are days when I wake up and I'm A-okay. There are days when I wake up and I'm down in the dumps. But I think, to answer the very last question, I don't think it's what I'm doing during my healing process that's making me... I don't want to say that, actually. Me going on a healing journey and declaring myself as someone who is being on a healing journey, me being open enough and having the courage to fix what is wrong with me, and I hate saying fix what's wrong with me, because not I'm crazy or something. Maybe I am. I don't know. But anyway, like, being able to just do what I'm doing and making the steps to be a better person, I know that I have hope for myself. That's literally what it is. I hate the fact that we get up here sometimes, and I do have my moments where I be like, niggas ain't shit, but niggas are shit. I love y'all. I love you, black man. I love you, Hispanic man. I love you, men of color. You know, I be having to say that because I do love y'all. But men, relationships with men can be tricky. And not because, like, there's sex involved or anything like that, but men aren't able to go on healing journeys in the same way that we are. And it's for multiple factors, but being able to just sit and listen, not just being able to sit and listen to them, but sit and listen to myself. If I wasn't able to sit down and just figure out who I was, I would not be able to heal myself. I would not be able to listen to men. I would not be able to listen to any of the women that come to events that write to me and say these things. I wouldn't be able to. So I think the first step to a healing journey is, one, identifying whether or not, like, you can really accept the challenge. And like I said, it's not a linear growth. So you're going to have some good days. You're going to have some bad days. You might even have some bad days and some horrible ass days, but like, you have to be dedicated to getting yourself to a better place. I hope everything that I said here answered the questions. If not, continue to ask questions and I will circle back to them. But I hope everyone who's on a healing process and a healing journey, I hope that you are finding the ways that you can be gentle to yourself, because it can be very mind-boggling. It's not easy, and it's not easy for me. I'll say, and I hate to compare things, but I will say I have it a little better than certain people, because I actually have a village. Part of some people's healing process is healing from the fact that they didn't have a village. They didn't have examples. There's no one to show them. And I'll speak to it. When it came to breaking certain generational curses, I didn't have an example. I just had to figure this shit out for myself. And when I cracked the code, I cracked it. And I can, you know, look to my siblings and my cousins that are younger than me and be like, this is how we gotta do this. Like, we're not doing it that way no more. But before you can get to that point of telling other people what to do, you have to take yourself through that journey. And there are going to be days where you cry. There are going to be days where you are sad. There are going to be days where you just want to be alone. That is okay. That is normal when you're on a healing journey. There are going to be days where you want to sit with your friends and just talk. That is all normal. Don't let anybody tell you that, you know, isolation isn't normal. It's very much normal, and it's very much needed. You need an isolation process, and I think everyone should have an isolation, a full 7 days where you are isolated from people to really just check in with yourself. But some people don't have that, and then, yeah, I pray that we all get there. But that's all I have to say. I will talk to y'all next week. Bye.